Welcome to this week's episode of The World According to Craig. And once again, I've got a parent with me to talk about all the questions I have that someday when I'm going to be a parent, I'm going to need answered. So I turn to people who are already smart in this respect. And so I turn to my good friend, Hattie. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So we're going to talk a little bit about what it's like to be a dad and how you find yourself, how they find themselves and all that. But before we do that, cheating the angle a little bit, I'd love for people to get a sense of who you are, because not everyone has the benefit of having gone to law school with you like I did. And you grew up in a deeply religious household, a Muslim household. And you were on a journey when I met you.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not like there's different types of religious, right? There's in different gradients. Like, we were very religious. And I grew up, I was born in LA. Grew up here, I think started in a two-bedroom apartment in Alhambra. So it was really, you know, an immigrant coming to America story.
And you were first generation, right?
Yeah. I was the first born here, right? And my parents were young. And so we moved, I think, like, let's say 6, 7, 8, 9 times. I don't even know how many times. I went to 2 high schools, Dime Bar, then Arcadia, and then went to UCLA. And then at some point, you know, I learned things about my parents. Like, my mother's family is very like Lebanese American, was very like European in a sense. Like, they'd go to like social clubs and the casinos, and her family drank, and it was kind of, you know, very, you know, like a, you know, happy-go-lucky sort of thing. My father's family, like, that was like a meat packer, like, who owned the goats. There's AIDS holidays, and there's like the big one is at the end of the pilgrimage, and there's like everyone sacrifices a goat in the family.
Okay.
And they give it to the poor, and that's the thing. So there's like a big demand for goats every year. There's like 2 or 3 people that controlled the market, and apparently my grandfather was one of those people, you know?
That is the best origin story, is my grandfather controlled the goat market in Arabia.
This is all like, Arabia is, you know, it wasn't like Lawrence, right? We weren't like Bedouins. It was like, it's Beirut. It's on the coast, right? It's a city. It's more of a financial cap. But anyway, so they were more religious. But then listen to my dad's stories, and it was more like mafiosa gangsters from a Scorsese movie, or like these guys would go out in big suits, they'd have like their woman around them, like the Gumars, and then they like, you know, have their wives at home with like 20 kids. And you're like, well, that's kind of weird that I was raised with all, you know. That came out later, though. I think, you know, when you grow up in this context, and the trigger for me was like relationships. I was a hopeless romantic, and I want to like have a girlfriend and date. And my dad's like, no, you can't. And I'm like, that's weird.
You're like, but all the movies say that I can.
But I'm supposed to find my true love and have a kiss in like the rain in Paris. That's how it works.
I mean, you have been a hopeless romantic the entire time I've known you as well. Yeah. So at least that didn't change.
Yeah, which is, you know, yeah, it's interesting because that was there, and it was always there. And so at like high school, you know, and then maybe it was some predilection I had, but when I got in these relationships, I get close to these families, had a good friend in college, you know, just a platonic friend. And I would start experiencing their holidays. Like, so I dated a Quaker in high school, and then, yeah.
I mean, you were getting the sampling.
Yeah, I know.
How many Quakers are there? There are like 10,000 left.
Not a ton. You know, there's Nixon. There's John Whittier Greenleaf. We lived in Whittier for a while. So there is just kind of like this sense of, that was it. You know, it's funny. I used to joke like, there's ways you can like, there's things like a lot of Muslims don't do. They don't drink. They don't eat pork, you know. And then like a lot of religions, there's like, you know, restrictions on other than extramarital sex, right? And I was like, there's clearly like a hierarchy of need and pleasure in that, in terms of like the things that you will want to do first. Like,
you're fine not having a pork bun.
Yeah, but you know. And then you start learning other things, especially on like, you know, folks that like get married and divorced within like an hour. Like, the kind of like workarounds in some like jurisdictions in the least that they'll do, you know.
You could get married and go on a date and then get divorced.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? So I don't know. So I came from this family. We were observant. We'd go to prayer. I was very religious. I had a very deep spiritual and emotional connection with God. I'd go to like these camps. I'd memorize verses of the Quran. But I think just because I am the way I am, you know, you just kind of, you learn this when you have kids, there's just a personality and I have it. It's, you know, kind of annoying and verbal and questioning, and that's who I am.
Oh, I know this personality.
Yes, you do. Very well.
It took me 10 years to fall in love with this personality.
What am I saying? You bring it out of me. So even stronger. But so there's the juxtaposition of that plus like this context and, you know, being immigrants and, you know, in the novel I wrote that no one will ever read and will never be published, there's this kind of sense that, you know, people come here to get something, but you give up something along the way. And that's true, you know, in terms of, you know, my parenting, but it's true for my parents. Like, they came here, they want to do a thing, but then, like, this society's different. They came from a broken society, you know, like the way the meatpacking, you know, the lock on the market ended was like there was a civil war, and like, you know, my parent grandfather had been through one before and said, we have to leave. So, you know, they all, like, 15 guys jumped in a Mercedes and drove to Syria, which is like escaping to Orange County for civil war. And then, like, one uncle stayed to fight and he got axed. He literally died by, according to my father, like, medieval.
An actual, like, an axe.
Okay. Yeah, to, like, the head. It's like something out of Game of Thrones. So, you know, that you go from that to here.
I mean, they did get out while the getting out was good. Yeah. Lebanon has not improved since then.
It was, you know, I went a couple of years ago for a wedding. It's still fun, you know. That's where I come from, right? And went through college, had some relationships, didn't go so great. Learned from them. And then when we met, when I was in New York, I was still kind of transitioning. And, like, you know, and New York was really the first time in law school when I just kind of let go of, I think, every other restriction. I was just like, I'm just going to kind of live this life as a young, you know, American.
Young, dashing American man about town.
I was dashing once upon a time. I did get about town, and I did gain about 30 pounds in my first year there that I had to work out all day that summer to get off. But it was, it was fun, right?
Yeah. And then, you know, what's interesting to me is, having known you, you've grown into this version of you. Like, it's, I mean, we all grow up. I mean, I wouldn't envy anyone who was trying to date the 26-year-old version of me. As you know, I was a terror. Not an actual terrorist, but just an emotional terror.
Uncalled for.
But now, you know, I'm in my 30s. I've settled down. I've calmed down, I would like to think.
Yeah, there are. Tremendously.
and you know, as have you. Like, we've grown up, which is,
yeah,
comes as a shock to anyone who knows us, is that we've grown up. And as you've grown up, you now have two boys.
Yeah.
Who are three?
No, 2 and 5 months.
2 and 5 months. Aiden, he's so advanced for his age.
Well, I'm still trying to keep myself from saying, like, 2 years, 3 months, you know, it's just,
okay,
like, trying to say just two.
So you have a beautiful wife and two kids. Yeah. Did you, in the process of, you know, leaving the world behind and exploring a whole new world and then settling into, mm-hmm, the world that you became, was this always a focus? Was it like, did you maintain your hopeless romantic North Star of, like, you know, a wife, a kids, a picket fence?
But, you know, it was never about, like, the wife or the kids or the picket fence. That was just like, if it didn't come out already, like, I'm very flexible. Like, I'm very open. So, like, I will, more than a lot of people I know, entertain an idea that I think at the end of the day is probably not right or a little bit broad. But I don't, like, instinctively get annoyed with, like, some, a good example is, like, you know, far liberal concepts. Like, I don't agree with, like, some of the ideas, but I don't get annoyed with them.
So you didn't vote for Bernie Sanders, but you don't get annoyed?
Well, not with people, but, like, the idea, right? Okay. I'll sit down, like, you know, I can understand a construct of intersection in all these intersectionalities and, like, this theory, and it's robust, but in reality, I think there's challenges with, you know, just creating a representative system around it, especially, like, given all the other, you know, logistical challenges. So that's kind of how I process stuff. It's not, you know, so I tend to be open to a lot of things and ideas, but, like, I wanted, like, the person, like, I wanted the feeling of that relationship, that adventure, that spark. It didn't manifest necessarily. I knew there'd be like a family down the road, but I wasn't so interested in that. And so,
but now you have one.
And now I have one. And that's because I was very open to it. And so my process I really like this girl and you know her and she's really great. And we just started, you know, dating, and it was a ton of fun. And she wasn't like other people I'd been with.
She was very, she was very understanding and very kind and sassy.
But it was like, she doesn't have, like, I don't want to get in trouble for this.
I promise you won't get in trouble.
She's not like, she's very, you know, I say this, like, she's very smart and hardworking, but like her sense of humor is incredibly silly. You know, she's not like pretentious or, you know, she's not just sitting there going like, you know, I like to sit and read like a Philip Roth book. She likes to read like, she's like an old Englishman. She just like wants to read books about World War II, you know, or, you know, like the Twilight series, which we got in a fight about in our first year together. Cause I was
so is she reading World War II books to put your kids to sleep
Nightingale,
now?
The Nightingale, I think it was the one she liked, or, you know, anything about the Nazis. But like, there is that. And there's like we're very different personality wise. But it was just good, and I really liked it. I remember the first thought I had when I saw her was at the old 116th and Broadway.
Yep.
What's that? It was where Jack Kerouac and Ginsberg used to hang out.
Yep.
The West End, but now it's like Havana Central, and it was like after the Pilf auction.
Yeah.
Third year, and I look across, and I'd like kind of, I didn't see anybody for a few months. One would call it a dry spell. And I look across the room, and it was just like a movie. And it was like, I was like, I just see her. And I'm like, why can't I just end up with someone like that? And it just happened. Like, I went out. Remember Max Miller? He was my wingman. Which, so the whole
there are less enviable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, he was, yeah. And so it was him. And then it was her friend since they're like in college, kindergarten, rather, Angela. And so I was talking to her, and I was just kind of not even myself that night. And we had a nice conversation, and I followed up with her friend who's like, don't even bother. And I was like, well, just let me Facebook her, because that's how you do it. And
the old DM in the
thing. I went out with her, and then when I got the call, and then I saw Angela like a couple weeks later. I might get in trouble for this. And Angela's like, well, don't get too excited because she's dating a doctor.
Oh, I remember this.
And so at the time, we just text back and forth, like, you know, very like quickly. And I said, oh, you know, well, let's see each other tonight if you're not busy with, you know, your doctor friend. And like, she just, it was like silence for an hour. You can tell she was doing recon. But, you know, I was of course she was seeing other people. Like, she was gorgeous. She was young. She was interesting. But yeah, I won. And so
that's the whole point. And
but not only that, it was so like, I really like being with her. And like, she had a studio and helping her out. And I like helping people. And like, And after a certain number of years, right, it's then like, well, what are we going to do with this? And that was challenging for me because I didn't necessarily believe in the, I was like one of those guys, like, I don't know if I believe in the construct of marriage and like in a modern society, right?
Oh.
Yeah.
My least favorite reaction from anyone.
But I wasn't like heavy about it, right? I was just like, I don't know. And there's like things I wanted to do, places that, like, you know, I've very much so. And this is an interesting shift in identity. Like I thought of myself as a writer. I want to write, and I was writing this novel and I was going to do that. And that's what I really wanted to do. And I wanted like these, like this view of myself. Right. And if you think about it, take a step back, that's really about the ego. And it's really like, everyone has a concept of who they are and who they want to be. And that entire transition as they go through life. And what sort of happened was I kind of did a calculation, and this is where that openness comes in. I was like, well, I think I want a family someday. And this person, and I think I was going through a difficult time in other ways. I think you know what I'm referring to. And so in a way where like when she met me, I was on top of the world. I was graduating, really good law school, you know, good job offer. And then the recession hit, and it was tough. I had a bit of a challenge, and like that, I just saw this like this sincerity and this honesty and this purity. And she, it was just, and she just we just did it. There was never a question about us. And that was, I was like, you can't find that on, you know.
Well, I mean, that's what's interesting about this is, you know, you talked about how you didn't necessarily, you ended up with, you know, a wife and kids, and you ended up with it because you were open to the idea, but you didn't necessarily go down that road. And you ended up with it almost by letting go of the preconceived notions of what you may have wanted and being open to the relationship. It's kind of a two sides of that coin on both of them being beneficial to you.
Well, you know, you can hold on to both at the same time. You'll have a harder time like I did. This is what I did do. But that was fine. So my point is, like, I was like, you know, so I do want a family, right? And I at some point, I think, and I want to be with this person. And so we got married, and then we planned, and we had a family. And at that, you know, and then for me, it was all like, am I ready to have kids? Can I support them? I mean,
I've discovered from all of my friends who are parents that no one is ever ready for kids, even if they think they are.
Sure. But I think it's like, you know, if it helps if there's a trust fund somewhere in the background, you know, like, because a lot of it is logistics. A lot of parenthood is logistics and coordinating with another person around care. So if you can get a night nurse, logistics become easier. If you can get a nanny or a cleaner, logistics become easier. Or, a parent or, you know, relative that'll help, logistics become easier, right? If you have a good support network. So and then once we had the kids, it's all consuming. And really what I realized, you know, I said, like, I wanted to be a writer. Like, I still love writing. I don't care about it like I used to. And maybe I will. But it was like, I was kind of sad, but there wasn't even enough, like, it was more like, this is the thing I was really good at that I want to do, but it's not really that important to my day-to-day anymore. And I still kind of hold it there, but it occupies such a smaller space. And, you know, one of the critiques of parenthood that you'll see sometimes by some is like, you know, it's very selfish, you know, it's like ego-driven, like, you know, like a mini-me, and it's, you know, this world is burning, so why would you introduce someone into it? But there's also, I think, and that's all true, you know, it's not like it's completely inaccurate, but it's also like, it's completely, you let go of yourself, you let go of the ego. It's not about you. I've seen parents where they still kind of make it about themselves, and it's just, I react to it. And it's not like I'm perfect. It's not like I don't make huge mistakes or do things. You know, I look at myself like I'm now the villain in the movie or, you know, but what you realize is like, it feels like when you let go of that and it really is about someone else and that's the priority, it's like it's happiness just unfiltered on tap. It's meaning, it's purpose, and it's not why I got into it. You know, I was still like, I can have kids now or later. My wife really wanted it. I was like, it's more than time. Like, I get it. And let's do it. Let's start this family. And, you know, it's just been great. And I look at it, I'm like, you know, I could be doing all these other things I want to do, but I don't do them. I like go out of my way to not do them because I'd rather spend time with my kid. And it's exhausting, but it's, you know, it's not about me. And that's great. It's just about him and what he wants. And you get to see the personality develop.
I mean, that's a powerful statement of where one, right? You have the realization that you've set aside these other pieces in life. You found this incredible value in these two sets of bright, shiny eyes now. But at the same time, it is all consuming and at times terrifying. And, you know, when you look on you growing up and what you were instilled with and then what your exploratory journey through the world, how do you even begin to contemplate what the world is going to look like for these two little boys, right? It's because if the cultural component is exposure, the second half that you talk about is helping them think for themselves, which I have concerns in general about whether mainstream Americans think for themselves, period, which is something I would like to encourage more of. But how do you get a 2-year-old to develop critical thinking ability?
they kind of just do it on their own, right? Like, I'm having full arguments with my son at this point. And we were talking about, I was trying to get him to nap because he's overtired. And he was like, I was like, Aiden, I was like, good boys, nap. He's like, good boys, no nap. I was like, that is, you know, it's like, well, you know, that's a logical argument too. You're just sitting there. And it's small, but like, he, you know, it's, they explore the world. They're, you know, they're naturally curious. His cousin is very different. She's very sneaky. She's very quiet. She kind of lurks, but she does bad things. You tell her to stop, she'll stop. And then she'll kind of like quietly wander off and do something. They all have their own personalities, right? And, you know, I have my faults and my wife has her faults. I never said that. And at the end of the day, they're going to pick up on some of that, right? And reflect it back on us. And either we go, oh, this is who we are. That's part of like the quirkiness of the Khatib family.
Do you look at the children and say, oh, I know where that came from and I should have seen that coming?
So they're kind of like a weird mix. Like Aiden is like this boisterous, energetic kid. He seems very extroverted, loves people. So that I think comes from me. But his drive and his intent, like so much of him could also just be Jenny, right?
He's relentlessly happy with the boat floaty in the pool.
But the other part about it is like, you don't know what happened to people, right? Along the way. Like my wife is not just who she is just because of who she was when she was two or three. Like some stuff happened to her, you know, in say middle school or high school. And that affected how she saw herself and probably changed, you know, who she became later, right? What kind of thing she said didn't. I think that kind of trauma is too strong a word, but just the interactions, experiences you have with the world will impact you, right?
Right. Everything you see becomes a part of who you are, everything you do.
But like ultimately you want them to just, like when I was 17, I went and I backpacked Europe by myself, which I think is nuts. Yeah. And you see 15-year-olds driving and you're like, this is an insane society because you can't even shave.
You were unleashed on Europe.
But this was like still kind of religious Hattie. So it was tame, but, and I was like, you know, clearly just being like, oh, fine. It was, I was just, I think in my mind, I hadn't seen it yet, but I thought of myself as like Ethan Hawke.
Okay.
And like, was it before, After Midnight?
There's a whole series of those.
I was like that. I was going to, and I did have an experience where I met this French girl on a train to Lyon, but she was going to see her boyfriend and then she got off and I was like, well, I'm alone. So that didn't work out. But like I was able to go and I remember like I was taking the channel, I think it was from Paris to London or the other way around. And I didn't realize you're supposed to like, again, kind of, this is 2000, 2001, supposed to call in advance and reconfirm the booking. Otherwise it would, like it was some like thing like that. And I didn't do it. So I get there and they said I couldn't go. I remember like getting my telephone card because that's what you had back then. No cell phone. I call my dad. He's like, well, you just have to go argue with him. I was like, what? He's like, I can't do it. Like, you're there, I'm here. You're go get a. So I went and I kind of like negotiated. Like, you know, I mean.
So now Aiden is already negotiating with you at two. So he's going to have a seamless experience.
But
backpacking
like, you want your kid, I would do. I want my kids, you know, like go out into the world and be okay with that. And not also, and part of that's constraints. You know, some people might like have someone do it for them. Some people might just go, I'm just going to stay here and get in a hotel room, you know, get my driver. Some people might go, I'm just going to hitchhike. You know, like there's different ways of solving this problem, right? But like the constraints in the world are real. And you want your kids, I want my kids to be able to deal with those, right? And so you want, you know, usually it's contextualized as education. I want them to go to good school. I want them to go to good preschool, college. I want them to get in. I want them to get a good job. But all that's for naught if they can't process the outside world coming at them and they can't process their own inner turmoil. And I think I'm lucky just by dint of who I am that I'm just have healthy self-esteem and I can take a lot and just kind of process it, where I've seen, in my opinion, people take much less and just collapse as human beings. You're just like, I don't even understand what you're complaining about. But everyone's kind of going through their own thing. So it's not fair to judge, right? But we all do it.
That's the lesson. Yes. Yeah,
but you know, so you're just kind of like trying to work on them to process their emotion. So, you know, and to be okay with who they are and kind of be tough, but caring and all the things that you want to instill in terms of values. But like, as the world comes at them, like you can't protect them from that. You can't protect them from really bad things happening to them. at a certain point. And I've never actually articulated this, but that is the thing that drives. And like, look, he's two right now. Like, he's in a protected bubble, right? He lives between Hollywood and like Armonk, New York. Like these are not places where you have to worry about anything. Well, parts of, you know. Yeah. So he's very protected, but like, you know, I would like him to be able to do it himself. To the extent anyone does it themselves, right?
Got it. Well, I think it's fascinating. You've gone on this incredible journey of finding yourself and doing it on yourself, backpacking through Europe, notwithstanding, and learning to argue with the channel operator. And the question always becomes, how do you help that next generation? And if you are a parent, if you go on this journey, you find love, you find children on that journey, and you're able to make it work, and it, you know, it becomes all consuming, and that in this journey, you've got to just construct or help create an environment that allows the child to construct themselves like this entire human being from scratch. It's a very complex thought overwhelming potential.
Is that a question?
Yes. No, it's my reaction. No, I think it's incredible that
they do it themselves, right? Like you can utterly suck as a parent and your kid comes out great, but like hating themselves like Steve Jobs, right? Like, you know what I mean? There's so much resilience in a lot of children and unresilient. Like, it's this weird sort of like game of, it is. It's like, it's a gamble. It's chance. It's roulette. Like, we all are given certain kind of genetic codes and, you know, and predispositions. And, you know, I don't know. Like, I'm at a tough part, like, physically, because you're constantly there with them. But emotionally, I think it's easy, because it's in some ways. I know it's hard for some parents. I don't want to, like, brush that aside, but like, you know, you find a lot of love in a child that looks up to you like a god, right? And then like they care, and then, you know, they're sweet, they can be mean, but they're not adults yet, right? Even though sometimes it feels like they are,
right?
They're not. I think talk to them when they're teenagers, or if like one of them develops an addiction problem or has like a real mental health issue. It's supposed to fake one, I don't know why I said that, but you know what I mean? Like, And that, I think, is what really worries me. That and some sort of, like black swan, people think of car accidents.
Right.
Like, I'm thinking of like, if he climbs out the window, falls, breaks his head, if he like falls through the slide, like all those things, or as they get older. Because that's the other part of parenting, is like worrying about this stuff that's never going to happen, hopefully.
If a spaceship accidentally lands on your kid's head.
That, or just like, you know, I saw my kid do something, like I talk about Aiden a lot because Alexander's 5 months old and he's just...
existing right now.
He's sweet. He has the energy of Baby Yoda. Like that's fully him. So like that's my second son. But with Aiden, it's like he was like really trying to get someone's attention, this other like kid his age's attention, and he really like loves the kids he's around, and he gets a little obsessed. Kind of scares me. Maybe he'll be like me. I'm gonna have to like kind of teach him that maybe you gotta give people space. They'll come to you. But they kind of left him. He didn't look sad or process that. But I imagine like, well, in like 5 years or 10 years or 15 years, that might be like real heartbreak. And that I don't feel that today, but I remember how that feels. And I was like, it was like, it made me really sad because I was feeling it again. So that's like, it's all there. Well, it hits you when you're like trying to go to bed at like 11 p.m. You're just like, I'm going, oh my God, my kid might just like have a heartbreak in like 15 years. I don't really do anything about it, you know?
Well, I think that's probably the best explanation of parenthood on the planet is that you're lying awake at night worrying about something 15 years down the road. Listen, from what I see, you're doing an incredible job. And I had hopes of getting all the tips and tricks, but I think I got the insights and the idea that you should create an environment for kids to grow up in. And so I want to thank you for joining us today and sharing your experience. And I think it's the power of the everyday experience that can be inspiring to people. And so I want to thank you for joining us on this episode of The World According to Craig, where everyday people have stories that I think we can all relate to, or at least I can. And that's what matters since it's my podcast. So thanks so much for joining. I hope you tune in next week. And thank you, Hattie, so much for sharing your story about being a dad.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Fun. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for tuning in to The World According to Craig. I really should have thought through this podcast title thing before I used it, since it's really the world according to other people who are smarter, better, brighter, prettier, and more amazing. And that makes me happy, because I'm delighted to welcome them every week, and I hope that you'll join us for a new story every Tuesday.